I hereby call this meeting of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees to order. My mic?
It doesn't sound like it.
Yeah. Thank you. Our first order of business is approval of a proposed agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The agenda is approved. Next order of business is approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the February 11th, 2022 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstention? The minutes are approved. We will now move to public participation. Board Secretary Eric Scorsese.
Thank you, Mr. President. We will now proceed to the public participation portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. Any responses from board members will come during the trustee comment portion of the meeting. We will first hear from Carol Prohinsky, followed by Victor Rodriguez Pereira.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Carol Prohinsky. Since 2007, I've been an assistant professor in the College of Business at Supply Chain Management. I'm a trained researcher who has selected a teaching-focused career. Today, I'm here in my capacity as a board member at large with the Union for Non-Tenured Track Faculty, or UNTF. Our union represents one-third of all faculty, or approximately 750 teachers. In February, our president, Dr. Kate Birdsall, spoke to you about our hopes for the upcoming negotiations between MSU and our union. Today, I will discuss two key points of the bargaining platform, voting rights and salary. We can't vote on many of our committees. We can't vote in department meetings. We can't vote to participate in a democratic process. Although MSU says it wants DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, the behavior suggests otherwise. Include our diverse perspectives for a richer and more equitable decision-making. Speaking of rich, my graduating seniors in supply chain management earn $70,000 on average, yet 58% of our faculty campus-wide earn less than a typical 22-year-old graduating from the College of Business. 12 faculty earn less than $40,000. When I hear numbers like these, I'm embarrassed for MSU. We pay poverty wages to experienced individuals with terminal degrees. Based on publicly available data and rank, I researched 6 universities: Indiana, Illinois, Nebraska, Ohio State, University of Michigan, and MSU. The handout includes details of that research. MSU average salaries are consistently below other schools. For first-year writing, our UNTF faculty earn an average of $47,000, which is $39,000 less than other universities. Our UNTF marketing faculty earn $106,000 less than 4 of the institutions and one-third of the salary of University of Michigan on average. And University of Michigan does not offer a marketing major. With a lack of voice and a lack of salary, becoming a destination employer is going to be a challenge. The status quo must go. Together, we want MSU to be strong. With our collective efforts, Spartans will become a destination employer. Thank you.
Thank you. Victor Rodriguez Pereira, followed by Rex Lamore.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Victor Rodriguez Pereira. I have been a teaching assistant professor at MSU since 2017. I teach Spanish at the Romance and Classical Studies department. Although I have been at MSU for a relatively short period of time, I have seen and experienced how little efforts in creating a diverse academic landscape have a detrimental impact on developing students and faculty alike. As a Puerto Rican academic in a poorly diverse field like medieval studies, I have experienced from both the side of student and faculty our need for structures and resources necessary to support a diverse faculty and student body so that both can flourish and grow into the professionals we aspire to be. We at UNTF support Michigan State's strategic plan, which highlights the historic steps the university took in the last century to meet the needs of an increasingly diverse campus community. This plan also states that its goal is to become a national leader in increasing diversity, promotion, inclusion, ensuring equity, and eliminating disparities on our campus and beyond. We applaud the university's goal of building a supportive and inclusive network that fosters diversity of ideas, respect for others, and collegiality among students. However, we find it somewhat insufficient. Little is detailed in your plan about the specific efforts Michigan State will take to support its teaching faculty who have the most direct impact on our student body. MSU's strategic plan states that the university will focus investment on effective student support systems, particularly for first and second year students, to put them on a positive trajectory towards graduation. However, teaching faculty who are on the front lines of undergraduate education are constantly and severely undersupported, overworked, and underpaid. This situation is particularly critical for faculty from underrepresented sectors of society who are consistently paid less and receive less support than any other faculty subsegment, not only at MSU, but nationally. How then are we expected to help MSU build a more inclusive, equal, and fair university when we don't even have the resources or support that would allow us to better support our students? If the university is really committed to a holistic approach that might create an enriching experience for first and second year students, it should do as much as possible to retain those who have the most direct impact on these students. Teaching faculty who are constantly in the front lines of MSU's pedagogic mission can attest to the detrimental effect of this imbalance. We at UNTF support any and all initiatives that lead MSU to become a great institution that we know it can become. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Rex Lamore, and I'm here representing the MSU Ad Hoc University Sustainable Investment Working Group. Happy Earth Day, fellow human beings. I happen to have been here on the campus for the first Earth Day in 1970. Let me briefly discuss our work here as Ad Hoc Working Group. We are representatives of faculty, staff, and community partners that are committed to understanding the Board of Trustees' current endowment investment policies and practices. And we hope that you will take a few minutes over the next few weeks to review a set of questions that we've provided for the Board to help us more fully and accurately understand your investment policies and practices. And I'll briefly review the questionnaire for you. Our first question asks you, as per your existing policy statement, how do you define social conscience, and how is that applied in our investment practices? Our second question asks about the Budget and Finance Committee. Are the meetings open to the public, and if so, when are they held and where are they held, and are minutes kept for public review? Third, are the investment advisory subcommittee meetings also open to the public? When are they held and where are they held? And can you identify how members of that advisory committee are selected? Our fourth question relates to the investment consultants that the university uses to manage its investment portfolio. Please identify them by name and the firms of which they are affiliated. And additionally, how are they selected? Our fourth, fifth question speaks to investment managers. This is another category of partners that work with us on managing our investment. Again, who are they and what firms do they represent? And then we further ask, what percent of our endowment is managed by those firms so that we have an opportunity to see if there is a large amount concentrated in a particular firm? Our seventh question speaks to the proxy policy that the board has. The current policy recommends that the investment managers vote with the management on proxy issues. And our question is, how do we reconcile that directive to our investment managers with our social conscience directive? Are there cases where we have differed from the management in voting on proxy issues? Our eighth question is related to current status of the investment policy. Apparently, the investment policy that's available online was dated 2017. We're wondering if it has been updated. If so, where is it? And then our ninth question is, and our final question, is to ask, what effort are you going to be making in the future to increase transparency on our investment practices? Again, our fact-finding body is anxious to present to the MSU community a studied report on how our institution is investing its endowment. So, thank you.
Thank you.
Grace Rathburn, followed by Jesse Estrada-White.
Thank you all for coming here today on this beautiful Earth Day morning. My name is Grace Rathburn. I am a junior at this school studying political science and economics. I came all the way from North Carolina to take advantage of the school's opportunities, leaving my warm weather and family behind. One of these opportunities was, of course, joining Sunrise. And on behalf of Sunrise, we'd like to thank you. We'd like to thank you for helping get this university off of coal power. We'd like to thank you for your investments into carports for electric vehicles. And we'd like to thank you for meeting with the Lieutenant Governor about the production of electric vehicles. These initiatives have not gone unnoticed or unappreciated. Since the last time we spoke here, Sunrise has been very busy. We have spent hours doing teach-ins. We come here today with four new speakers and 30 supporters, and with a petition with over 1,000 signatures. As you know, we are here calling for full disinvestment, both direct and indirect, from fossil fuels. I'd like to look back on my time at MSU with pride. Pride in knowing I was part of a responsible and forward-thinking organization. Pride that my university was one of the first universities in the nation to fully divest from fossil fuels. I know I'm not the only student who would take pride in such a strong initiative. This university has provided its students with so many opportunities. But what good will those opportunities provide in a world full of climate change and pollution? A great education cannot protect its recipients from rising food costs. A degree cannot defend someone against a raging hurricane. An exceptional college experience cannot heal a person facing asthma or cancer caused by pollution in their community. I and many other students owe this university a great deal. We owe this board a great deal for fostering such a wonderful environment to learn and grow. We are also grateful to be here, to be Spartans. But those opportunities you have given me and my fellow students do not absolve you from the responsibilities you have to humankind at large. It is a responsibility of all of us to make sure our world stays safe and clean. Thank you for your time and attention, and thank you for the previous and future initiatives to making our world a cleaner and better place. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members of the board. My name is Jesse Estrada-White. I'm a freshman here at MSU and a member of the Sunrise Movement. I'm here to speak on the issue of complete and immediate divestment from fossil fuels and respond to what some of me and my colleagues have heard from you in the past. Members of the board have previously stated that currently only a small percentage of the endowment is invested in fossil fuels. However, in a $4 billion endowment, that small percentage is still millions of dollars. In fact, it's around $68 million, including over $1.5 million invested in Enbridge, a company that was responsible for the largest inland oil spill right here in Michigan, the Kalamazoo River oil spill. So not only does investing in Enbridge harm our environment, it harms the very Michiganders that you have promised to serve. I could go on and list off all the dangerous investments made in the endowment, but the fact of the matter is all investments in fossil fuels are dangerous. So the question is no longer how big are the investments, but why have we not divested fully? Thankfully, honorable members of the board, you have already answered this question for us. You say that these are leftover investments that you are contractually tied to, but hopefully, by 2031, all of these investments will run out. My colleagues and I have just a few problems with this statement. First, why have we not gotten an official statement from the board promising not to renew these investments or start new ones in the future? If you are committed to making a sustainable MSU, as we at Sunrise believe you are, then this should be no problem. Second, these contracts cannot be ironclad. There is always a way to break a contract that allows this university to be on the right side of history. Also, if the financial obligation is so small, as you have previously stated, then the overhead caused by pulling out of these investments should be negligible, shouldn't it? Last and most importantly, in light of a recent report, it has become imperative that we act immediately. We have only 8 years to cut our fossil fuel use by 43%, according to the International Panel on Climate Change, or face worst-case scenarios. But by the board's date of 2031, we will be well past the deadline set by the IPCC. The board and this university have an obligation and a duty to divest fully from fossil fuels immediately for the good of yourselves, but more importantly, for everyone that you love, the Michiganders you were elected to serve. When you divest, you could put this university at the forefront of a movement to save our planet, but if you fail to divest, we'll be members of an academic and, most importantly, leading agricultural institution that allowed the destruction of our planet to continue. And finally, with all due respect, if nothing changes, I personally will witness the destruction of our Earth. I'm asking that for me, yourselves, and your children and grandchildren, that you recognize the sanctity of our Earth and divest immediately and fully. Divestment may seem like a small part, but it is what you have the power to change. I am here today so that I can look myself in the mirror in 20 or 30 years and say I did all that I could. Will you be able to do the same? Whether or not we are successful, will you be able to say that you did all you could when it mattered? Divest now and divest fully. Know what you do, what you know the right thing is. Do what you can. Thank you for your time.
Jacob Levengood, followed by Truman Forbes.
Members of the board, thank you for allowing us to speak with you today. My name is Jacob Levengood, and I'm a sophomore in James Madison College and a member of Sunrise MSU's core team. I was born right here in East Lansing, Michigan. I grew up loving MSU, a fact that can be testified to by my presence here now. And I believe in this school as a vehicle of change. And that is why I come to you today to assert the importance of divesting from fossil fuels. I applaud you on the steps you have already taken. I recognize the personal and political will it takes to accomplish this task. But if MSU is to really be the vehicle of change that I and so many others imagine, then an immediate termination of all direct and indirect investments in fossil fuels is essential. Divestment on this scale is not unheard of. Over the last few years, both public and private universities have made strides towards full divestment, including other Big Ten institutions such as the University of Minnesota and our largest rival, the University of Michigan. As these other institutions have recognized, the times are changing. Fossil fuels are a product of the past and represent a dying industry. Beyond any moral qualms or justifications, these investments are not viable in the long term. The UN Secretary General referred to investments like ours as stranded assets, a blot on the landscape and a blight on investment portfolios. The board has a responsibility to ensure the financial stability of the university, and the continued presence of these investments is a rejection of that. Additionally, Michigan State University prides itself in being an agricultural college, a legacy I know that board members like Trustee Byram are particularly proud of. However, agricultural productivity in the state of Michigan is in an absolute freefall as a direct result of the fossil fuel companies we are funding. Spring frosts and rising temperatures resulting from climate change are destroying entire harvests that many of our alumni rely on to survive. Apples alone produce up to $900 million in economic impact within the state, and agriculture is essential to our economy. We cannot afford to lose it. Yet our current investments put this entire industry into peril. As it currently stands, MSU is sacrificing its students, alumni, and reputation for these investments. Why should prospective students consider MSU when the University of Michigan is outperforming us on this issue? Why should alumni who make up $57 million in MSU's yearly revenue consider donating to a school that is funding the destruction of our livelihoods? But it is not too late to act. As one of the largest universities in the country, MSU has the opportunity to completely shift this dialogue. Fully divesting from fossil fuels would make MSU a leader in a movement with unimaginable momentum. Members of the board, you have two options. You can let MSU fall behind, sacrificing both your students and the future of the university. Or you can make MSU a leader in the field and the face of the tidal wave of change that will carry the nation to the next era of human achievement. I spoke earlier of MSU as a vehicle of change. Well, this university is ready to drive. All we need is for you to turn the key. Thank you.
Aaron Forbes, followed by Robin Ann Hartett.
Hello, board members. I'm a second-year student here at MSU, and my name is Truman Forbes, and I'm also a core team member for Michigan State's Sunrise Movement. This morning, you've heard the many technical and concrete reasons why complete and immediate divestment from fossil fuels and increased investment in renewables is not only crucial for MSU, but for the planet. To further stress this importance of complete and immediate divestment from fossil fuels, I wanted to tell you a story about why I decided to come to MSU. I grew up in a rural town in Pennsylvania called Bradford, where most of my graduating class went to a local college or straight into the workforce. I can count on one hand the number of people from my graduating class who went out of state for school, and obviously I was one of them. So why would I come all the way to Michigan? And not just to Michigan, to East Lansing. Well, the answer is simple. MSU. There was something that I was desperately craving for the 18 years I was in Bradford. A community that wanted to make a change in the world, and that's what I found when I came to MSU. Even though I had no connections to the university prior to visiting, there was something magnetic that I just couldn't resist. I was wanted. I was needed, even. I felt like this was a place where I could make a community and friends with those that cared, who cared about the environment, racial equity, and making a difference in the world. Thankfully, my hopes were affirmed even in the middle of a pandemic when I was stuck in my childhood bedroom doing my first year of classes online. I was able to meet people through classes and a variety of clubs, including the Sunrise Movement, where we built that family I'd craved. It was here I felt I was making the biggest difference, pushing for our elected officials to create and implement robust climate policies. I was working with fellow Spartans who felt empowered to fight for something bigger than ourselves. And it wasn't just in Sunrise I saw this passion and fervor, but across campus in groups such as ASMSU, Faculty Senate, participants in Wednesday's campus convening on climate change, and the almost 30 of us here today, and the 1,000-plus Michigan State residents, alumni, students, and parents who have already signed our petition. So many fully embodying the phrase, Spartans will. But here we are, for the third time this school year, demanding the same simple thing, complete and immediate divestment from fossil fuels. Please be as brave and intelligent and innovative as the students who have been molded and shaped by this university and make the leap. Show me that I wasn't wrong for coming all the way to Michigan State. Show us you have the courage to listen not only to the science or even to the stakeholders of this university, but to the more than human life whose very survival depends on that is threatened by our negligence. Show us that we should be proud to call ourselves Spartans. Thank you.
Good morning, Spartans. My name is Robin Hartnett. I'm a very loyal Spartan. I received my BS from Michigan State in 1990, a long time ago, and Michigan State my master's in education in 2000. My daughter is currently a student at the College of Engineering and resides on campus at Wilson Hall. I really want to thank you for allowing me to speak to you today on behalf of the Spartan Varsity Swimming and Diving Program. And I don't know why I'm so nervous, but I'm going to do my best. My interest in this crusade is very simple and very basic. I've been teaching swimming for almost 40 years and continue to coach swimming in the Detroit area, but my heart will always be in East Lansing. As a Spartan and a lifelong swimmer, it was easy to get behind the fight to help reinstate the 100-year-old Michigan State swimming team. While I didn't swim on the swimming team because I'm not tall enough, I was part of the Green Splash synchronized swimming team in the 1980s, and I'm truly thankful for all that Michigan State has done for me, both athletically and academically. At first, it was surprising to me that there would even be a question that Michigan State, a huge part of the Big Ten, would even consider eliminating a vibrant swimming and diving program with over 40 swimmers. These swimmers not only dominate in the pool, but also in the classroom. I'm sure you know that the combined women's grade point average at Michigan State is 3.87, and the men's is a close 3.71. These facts show that the Michigan State Spartans need a robust swimming and diving program. In addition to these numbers must also say something about the caliber of the Spartan swimmers and divers as MSU students and members of the East Lansing community. As I understand it, the combined budget for Michigan State men's and women's swimming and diving team is a little over $2 million, and more than half of that goes to scholarships to students who, as of today, have remained on campus even after their program was cut in October of 2020. I personally do not have that kind of cash, but I will say that given the facts above, I think that that money is very well spent by the university. I'm sure you're all aware that the Spartan Swim Club victory on April 10th of 2022, just a few weeks ago, at the Collegiate Swim Club Championships. Our Spartan swimmers competed without a coach and beat out many other well-known teams, including the University of Virginia and Ohio State. Two notable Spartan swimmers, Casey Venn and Travis Nikowitz, won a whopping 6 titles each at the Georgia Tech event. The victory at the Collegiate Swim Club Championships, the caliber of the varsity students, past academic success, and the university's plans to build a new athletic center are just a few reasons why you should consider reinstating both programs at today's MSU Board of Trustees meeting. The new athletic facility, including the new improved aquatic facility, in addition to being another great resource for the entire MSU student body here on campus, will attract even more swimmers and ultimately add to the diversity of the future Spartan swimming teams in our beloved MSU campus. Thank you, and go green. I'm really sorry I went over time.
Good morning, Board of Trustees. My name is Dawn Polk-Lagerstrom. I was a varsity swimmer here at MSU from 95 through 99 and a member of the Battle for Spartan Swimming and Diving. The reason why I'm here today is to talk to you about reinstating the men's and women's varsity swim teams. I know you have heard from other members of our group and know that we have donors offering to match up to $8.5 million in pledges and estate donations. I know you have heard from current team members and know of their devastation and difficult decisions as student athletes. I hope you are aware of their courageous decisions to stay as student athletes here at Michigan State and finish their educations and continue their swimming careers and go on to win the College Club National Championship. I know you have heard from parents of the swim team and have heard about the family and community that is Spartan Swimming and Diving. I do not know if you have heard from parents of future Spartans. Back on October 22nd, 2020, when I heard the news of our program ending, I cried for my son and all the other young age group swimmers that we're never going to have the same opportunities that I was able to experience here at Michigan State. I would not have been able to attend Michigan State or any other four-year university if it wasn't for swimming. I grew up in Dearborn and currently live there where swimming is a dying sport. It's a city with three high schools where our pools only have 4 to 5 lanes. And actually, a fourth high school doesn't even have a pool. Facilities should never be an excuse to take away opportunities from future Spartan athletes. Olympic sports such as swimming and diving should be a priority, not an afterthought. University of Iowa has reinstated their women's swim team, giving future Hawkeye athletes opportunities and hope. Dartmouth, William & Mary, and East Carolina have all reinstated their swimming and diving teams, giving their future student athletes hope and opportunities. I stand here today as a parent of a future Spartan athlete asking you to reinstate the men's and women's swimming and diving teams to give my son and all other young swimmers in the state of Michigan opportunities and the hope that they deserve. Thank you.
Thank you. Ava Boutrous, followed by Daniel Schemmel.
Good morning. My name is Ava Boutrous, and I am a senior at Michigan State University, about to receive my BA degree in chemistry with highest honors. I am also a member of the women's swimming and diving team. For someone who will not be a student here in just a few weeks, one would probably ask why I care so much about the team's status at this point. One thing you need to know, President Stanley, is that Michigan State University's men's and women's swimming and diving team does not know how to quit. Throughout our years of training, we've been constantly told to push through the tough set, push through academics, push through life with empowerment, determination, and grace. By pushing through, we have achieved high accomplishments as a team. Such accomplishments include the women's team having an overall team GPA of 3.87 in fall of 2020, ranking number one across all NCAA programs. Multiple former team members receiving the President's Award, Olympic trial qualifiers, and significant team representation in clubs and charities. Having devoted my college career to being a successful student athlete at MSU, attending the academic gala last week was simply unbearable. Seeing two of my fellow graduating teammates with perfect 4.0 GPAs not receive the President's Award, and the team being ineligible for any team or individual awards left us speechless. But that only adds fuel to the fire. As you may have seen, the Michigan State Club swimming team won nationals a few weeks ago in Atlanta, Georgia, and I guarantee that the 13 former members of the varsity swimming team helped capture Michigan State's stunning victory. Yet another example of the value we bring to Michigan State University's reputation. But what about your reputation, President Stanley? Your fellow board members have expressed a willingness to come to the table and discuss our ideas for reinstating the swim and dive program. You, however, have repeatedly chosen not to support this conversation. In addition to facility issues and other baseless reasons, the university claims our team was terminated. Former athletic director Bill Beekman stated our team's Big Ten rankings had improved in the years Coach Giannotis was head coach. With any other sport at Michigan State, performance and ranking issues would have been considered a coaching problem rather than a talent problem. My fellow teammates proved this by bringing home the championship at Club Nationals. In fact, many of us provided our honest feedback in NCAA surveys at the end of each season regarding our coach's poor leadership. Yet nothing was ever done. If Big Ten rankings were so important, why wasn't a new coaching staff ever discussed? Swift replacement of coaches for poor performance has been a common practice at MSU. Yet Coach Giannotis is one of the longest-standing Spartan head coaches at the university. It doesn't make sense. A $95 million 10-year contract from Mel Tucker and a newly approved recreation facility worth millions of dollars that will include a new pool. You have the money, you have the time, and you'll soon have the facility. Enough of the excuses. Talk to us. Listen to our ideas. Be part of the solution to reinstate the team. Even though I will not be part of the student body in just a few weeks, please don't think for a second that my fellow graduates, my fellow team members, or I are leaving this fight. We are still Spartans, and we are still here. Thank you.
Trustees, members, President Stanley, I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Dan Schemmel, and I was a member of the swimming and diving team here at Michigan State from 2004 to 2008. My brother and I followed in the footsteps of our grandfather, who was a 57 grad and was later cremated in his favorite Michigan State sweats. I stand before you today not just as an alum, but as an advocate for the future of our sport. Swimming cultivates character, integrity, and grit to a level that is unmatched by any other athletic endeavor. I'm devastated that my alma mater has chosen to eliminate an environment that instills characteristics every university and future employer strive to find and that our world so badly needs. I currently reside in Palo Alto, California, where I'm in my third year as the head coach of the men's swimming and diving team at Stanford University. Being at Stanford has been a dream come true. I've had the privilege of sharing the pool deck with Olympic champions, world record holders, and most recently led our team to a seventh place finish at the 2022 NCAA Championships. None of this would have been possible without the life lessons, relationships, and values I developed while fighting for the green and white. We too recently felt the heartbreak of discontinued sports on our campus. In the summer of 2020, Stanford announced a discontinuation of 11 varsity sports, cutting down from 36 to 25. Following the announcement, Athletic Director Muir, Provost Drell, and President Tessier Levine understood the turmoil that would strike the Stanford community and opened themselves up to discussions with the student body, current student athletes, and alumni groups. In the spring of 2021, after several collaborative meetings, President Tessier Levine announced the reinstatement of all 11 sports. In the wake of a very challenging moment, President, Provost, and AD showed true leadership by being transparent in why they made their decision, showed empathy for all of those affected, and were brave enough to reverse the decision that they had made. I hope that in sharing my story of a university and an athletics department in a very similar situation that we're in now, operating with a very similar budget, that's also supporting 15 more varsity sports, that it inspires you to reconsider your decision. This story demonstrates that true leadership is willingness to acknowledge and correct mistakes. President Stanley, after witnessing one of your peers navigate a very similar situation, I hope that my story inspires you specifically to take action. In 18 months, you haven't responded to a single request from our group, many of which were sent prior to the lawsuit brought on by the women's team. We hope that you can show compassion, empathize with our pain, hear our plan to sustain our program, and be brave enough to reinstate a sport that has represented this university with integrity, honor, and pride for nearly 100 years. Thank you.
Rachel Acock, followed by Alexis Lefevre.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Acock. I'm a sophomore from Knoxville, Tennessee, and I'm a member of the Honors College, Business College, and I am, or I guess was, a member of the women's varsity swim team. Even though the school is far away from my home, it's kind of always held a special place in my heart because I've had a lot of extended family graduate from here, but more importantly, my mother graduated from here in 1992 and my sister in 2019. My oldest sister, Courtney, was also a member of the women's varsity swim team. Athletically, she competed and was a Big Ten team member all 4 years. Academically, she maintained a 4.0 GPA and was the recipient of the President's Award her senior year. I was in 7th grade when she committed to swim here, 8th grade when she started her freshman year, and a junior in high school when she graduated. I grew up with Spartans Will in Michigan State Swim and Dive. After being able to see what she was received here, the opportunity she was granted, it kind of set the standard for what I wanted during my college years, both academically and athletically. Ultimately, I decided to continue my family's legacy and become a Spartan. Within my first month or so on campus, I already knew my experiences were not going to live up to my expectations. You guys took a lot of the opportunities away from me that I was hoping to receive. My first opportunity was my ability to compete and finish my career as a D1 athlete. I have trained over half my life to get to this point in my career, and within an hour or so, you guys changed my outlook on swimming forever. The day you guys decided to cut our team, I'd never been made to feel worse. You made me feel worthless in every way possible. You guys also made me feel terrible or not competitive enough at a sport that I've competed in for over 10 years of my life. Never in my 18 years of my life prior to this day had I been made to feel this way. So not only did you take away the opportunity for me to represent a university I once loved so much, you guys made me feel insignificant in every way possible. And then, this also unfortunate decision also took away my opportunity to reach academic goals I set for myself. After committing here and seeing what my sister achieved, I made it a goal of mine to attend the academic gala each year and hopefully receive the President's Award my senior year.
When you guys decided our team was no longer worth fighting for, you guys took away my opportunity to be eligible for these such awards. I maintained a 4.0 GPA my entire life, and I was hoping to continue this standard as I continued my time here at Michigan State. But now that feature just seems useless because I can't achieve the goals I wanted to with it. And also, the reason I can't achieve these goals are completely out of my hands. I think, though, the hardest thing that I've had to deal with this decision and having to process it, is the fact that my parents were not allowed to ever see me compete in person as a college athlete, and they weren't allowed to see my finishing of my career. They supported me through all my athletic endeavors since the start of my athletic career, and now they don't get to see the end. This makes me feel like a failure because I feel like I let them down, and I wasted their time and resources. With just one decision, this university has taken so much from me in the span of a year and a half, and you guys have made me feel ways that I hope to never feel again in my life. I want you to know that we are a team worth fighting for, even if you guys don't see it now. And if you guys take anything from this meeting today, it's that I want you guys to know exactly how much you took from a group of students who have given nothing but their all for Michigan State. Thank you.
Hello. Hello. My name is Alexis Lefevre, and I'm the president of MSU Swim Club. As said before, 2 weeks ago this Sunday, Michigan State Swim Club won our national championship meet for college club swimming. While this honor is great for the swim club, I want to talk about the reason that we won this championship, and it wasn't me. This was won by former varsity swimmers. 13 individual events, as well as 4 relays, were won by former varsity swimmers. These are only the first place wins. There are even more top 3 finishers. Naming a few of these swimmers are Travis Nikiewicz, Casey Venn, Cindy Kelly, Sophia Bailo, Sheridan Phelan, and Stefan Freitag. To add to another success by these swimmers is Travis and Casey. They are the high point getters at this meet, which means they won the most points out of every single person, and there are over 1,000 athletes at this meet. While the wins in itself are impressive, I want to highlight how much they won by, because this is not your typical championship meet. For most championships, events are won by milliseconds, by hundredths of a second. But these swimmers won by seconds. Casey Venn won the 100 individual medley, by one second and a half, which is ridiculous. That never happens. We are immensely grateful as a club to have these former varsity swimmers on our team. But this should have not been the case. These swimmers need to compete at a higher level given to give them competition, and college club swimming is not providing that. I've been to 3 college club swimming championships, and I've never seen a team dominate more than this past one. Although I feel that their swimming speaks for itself from everyone who has spoken about their swimming, I want to take a moment to mention their commitment to this club team as well as their commitment to the varsity swim team. Their swimming has spoken for themselves, but these swimmers are committed to advancing the swimming for this community. They are committed to reinstating this varsity swim team. And I cannot express how much dedication I see from each of these swimmers, as many of them train with us as well as train on their own to be able to compete at such a level that they deserve to compete at. Last week, they went to Waverly Piranhas Swim Club, and half of the people who came from MSU Swim Club were varsity swimmers, giving back to our community, and this is why they are committed to swimming. They are committed to Lansing Area Aquatics. These swimmers deserve to compete where they are challenged, and that is not college club swimming. They came to MSU to swim at a Division I college level, and that's what it deserves. As the president of MSU Swim Club, I support the reinstatement of the MSU Swim Dive Team. Thank you.
So thank you, and I want to thank everyone who spoke this morning for your comments. In my remarks today, I'll highlight some notable accomplishments and honors earned by Spartans since we last met, as well as a number of exciting facility openings and leadership appointments. As we mark Earth Day today, I want to acknowledge all those Spartans working to make our world more sustainable. MSU has made strong commitments in progress and sustainability through cutting-edge research, experiential learning, community engagement, and operational practices. Our MSU 2030 strategic plan commits us to climate neutrality by 2050 and several more near-term goals through our four-pillar framework of campus, curriculum, community, and culture. I was pleased to help kick off the first campus convening on climate change Wednesday, which was produced by our Office of Research and Innovation with great participation from our colleges. And later in the day, we enjoyed hosting Lieutenant Governor Garland Gilchrist and other special visitors for a roundtable focused on public-private partnerships supporting Michigan's leadership in electric vehicles and advanced mobility. The event also allowed us to highlight our excellent engineering program and the exciting R&D innovation that contributes to the state's economy in a growing economic sector. This good work, creating a greener future, builds on the exceptionally successful summer semester and academic year. We returned to in-person learning and activities following the prior year remote programs, and that has helped bring us together as a community. I'm looking forward to joining trustees and colleagues in saluting the more than 9,200 spring graduates at our convocation and commencement ceremonies on May 6. I'm certain our graduates will be inspired by our honorary degree recipients and guest speakers. It will be a thrill for our undergraduate degree recipients to hear a top Michigan State University score, first-round NBA draft pick, Olympic gold medalist, philanthropist, and sports analyst Steve Smith speak. He will receive an honorary doctoral degree in education. Another alum, Carhartt President and Chief Operating Officer Linda Hubbard, will address master's degree recipients and receive an honorary doctoral degree in business. And alum Ronald Goldsberry, a United States Army captain and former Ford Motor Company executive, will address doctoral degree recipients and receive an honorary doctoral degree in science. We will also present honorary degrees to alums Diane and Jennifer Gilbert of Rocket Companies in Detroit and Wendy's president, Todd Penegor. They were not able to make their addresses to 2020 graduates in person. As we look to graduation, I want to congratulate the Board of Trustees scholars that we will honor today. It's so impressive to see so many students concluding their undergraduate experience with 4.0 grades, especially given the challenges posed by the pandemic. And of course, I've greatly enjoyed being able to host in-person events honoring outstanding students and faculty members in recent weeks. That includes Graduate and Professional Student Appreciation Week and spending time at the Hatch with some very impressive student entrepreneurs. I continue to be impressed with the scholarly excellence of our students. Andrew McDonald, who is an Honors College senior majoring in both computer science and advanced mathematics and statistics, was named a Gates Cambridge Scholar, making him the sixth to be named from Michigan State University. That scholarship will fund his doctoral degree studies at Cambridge, while his joint master's program will be funded by a Marshall Scholarship. Three additional MSU juniors were also recently named as 2022 Goldwater Scholars to pursue studies in science and mathematics. And 16 exceptional undergraduate and graduate students and alumni were selected for National Science Foundation Graduate Research Fellowships. This prestigious program supports graduate study in National Science Foundation-supported STEM disciplines. MSU's commitment to academic excellence was once again recognized by U.S. News & World Report. It placed five of our graduate programs at number one, including the College of Education's elementary and secondary education programs, where they've been since 1995. Curriculum and instruction remains at the top for the fourth year in a row among the college's eight graduate programs ranked in the top 20. And the Eli Broad College of Business Supply Chain Graduate Program remains number one for the sixth year in a row. The undergraduate program has topped its list for 10 years, while the College of Natural Sciences Nuclear Physics Graduate Program has been ranked at the top for 13 straight years. Finally, it's been a great season for athletics, and I've enjoyed cheering on our student athletes. Our men's basketball team took us to the NCAA tournament for the 24th straight year, the longest streak in Big Ten history and the third longest in NCAA history. It was also great this week to honor some of MSU student athletes who won championships individually or as members of their teams. Altogether, this year's list of champions is impressive. James Piatt won the 2021 U.S. Amateur Golf Championship and competed with the pros in the 2022 Masters Tournament. First-year gymnast Skyla Schulte finished in the top 10 on the beam of the NCAA Championship semifinals and is the third Spartan gymnast to earn All-American honors. Wrestling had five NCAA qualifiers. Men and women's track and field had three Big Ten champions, with two others who qualified for the NCAA championships. Men and women's cross country both competed in the NCAA championships twice in 2021 due to COVID's impact on fall sports. And women's golf won the 2021 Big Ten championship. Spartan football were the 2021 Peach Bowl champions and won 11 games for the sixth time in the team's history. And in club sports, The men's water polo team, as well as their roller hockey team, were national champions, and the MSU Swim Club, which contained members from the Varsity Swim and Dive program, won the national college club title. I know everyone joins me in congratulating all our champion student athletes. As we conclude a successful semester and get ready to say goodbye to most students for the summer, we're already welcoming new ones who will join us in the fall. I want to congratulate the Office of Admissions, the Provost and Deans, for their work producing such a successful Admitted Student Day last Saturday for accepted first-year and transfer students. More than 7,000 prospective students and family members joined us from 37 states and 11 countries as far as India to visit our colleges, attend the green and white football game, and catch the excitement at a Breslin Center pep rally. Nearly every academic college participated with 108 informational sessions, plus admissions and Breslin staff volunteers from across campus. I'm happy to report that student deposits went up by more than 700 on Monday alone, and we are ahead of our usual pace at this point in the year. Moving to our personnel today, I would like to begin by recognizing Vice President for University Advancement Marty Heil for her very distinguished career. She has been a key leader in our comprehensive capital campaigns and has most recently been laying groundwork for the next one, and we will honor her later in today's meeting. I'm also excited to recommend Kim Tobin to be the next Vice President for Advancement. Kim has an impeccable record of success in donor and alumni relations with a wonderful ability to engage audiences in transformational philanthropic opportunities. Also on our agenda today, Provost Woodruff is recommending University Distinguished Professor Pero G. Dagbovi as the Associate Provost for Graduate and Postdoctoral Studies and Dean of the Graduate School. And Executive Vice President Beauchamp is recommending College of Human Medicine Interim Dean Aaron Souza's appointment be confirmed as Dean of the College. And finally, as we announced earlier this week, the selection of Christina Brogdon for Vice President for Human Resources and Chief Human Resources Officer, pending your consideration, Board of Trustees members, this morning. All will be vital leaders as we work towards the strategic plan vision of supporting the university's excellence and impact in the coming years. As we welcome new leaders, I would like to recognize the leadership of two other Spartans who will soon retire. University physician Dave Weissmantle, who will retire May 16th, has loyally served Michigan State University in a variety of capacities for the past 23 years. This includes leading the Student Health and Wellness Unit as Executive Director, where he helped lay the solid foundation for MSU's long-term health and wellness structure. His counsel and leadership have been especially critical through the dynamic and challenging years of the COVID-19 pandemic, and I want to express my gratitude for his experience and dedication. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge the dedicated career and pending retirement of Michigan State University's longest-serving faculty member, Professor Martin Hawley. Appointed as an assistant professor of chemical engineering in 1964, Dr. Hawley's service to MSU spans a phenomenal 57 years and 8 months. Wow. His association with MSU extends even further back as he earned both his bachelor's and doctoral degrees from Michigan State University. He has served in positions including chairman of the Department of Chemical Engineering and Materials Science, director of the Composite Research Center, and senior associate dean of the College of Engineering. The college estimates that Professor Hawley has educated at least 80% of Michigan State University's chemical engineering students, and last year an appreciative alumnus established the Martin C. Hawley Endowed Chair in his honor in the College of Engineering. Congratulations to this amazing and influential Spartan. I now want to touch on some of our recent facility openings. I was pleased to join the ribbon cutting for the new McLaren Healthcare Campus in the University Health Park, marking a new hospital, outpatient care center, and cancer institute. MSU's education and healthcare delivery is based on such community partnerships, and I look forward to pursuing our vision for healthcare with McLaren and with our many other medical partners. As you know, integrating the arts into everything we do is part of the University Arts Strategy and the Strategic Plan. An alumni memorial chapter has been without a working organ for many years. Until now. I had the pleasure of helping dedicate the chapel's new custom-built pipe organ in a special recital. I'm happy to report music is back on the banks of the Red Cedar, thanks to the generosity of Spartans and music lovers. Earlier this week, we celebrated the groundbreaking for the School of Packaging's building expansion after a fundraising campaign that, through the generosity of our partners, raised more than $10 million. This project, with a new endowed professorship, will help the school maintain its leadership in packaging education. Trustee Scott and I will be joining this afternoon's groundbreaking for our Service Road Recreational Turf Fields, which is our first project applying the student recreational facility fee the board approved last year. that this new facility, which will be ready for play in the fall, will serve over 8,500 IM Sports participants, more than 550 club sport athletes and officials, and many other users, supporting our priority of student health and well-being. And on May 2nd, we'll gather again to cap years of planning, construction, and testing with the opening of the facility for rare isotope beams, the FRIB. With that, MSU builds on its position as a destination for the global science community, a training ground for the next generation of scientists, and an important asset for our region's economy. I'm excited to see how FRIB contributes to new scientific discoveries as well as practical applications that improve people's lives. Finally, April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. As part of our continuing efforts to address relationship violence and sexual misconduct, I want to remind the community of two remaining Zoom listening sessions to share feedback on the RBSM strategic plan. Those sessions are next week at noon on April 25th and at 7 p.m. on April 27th. I want to thank Professor Rebecca Campbell and Deputy Police Chief Andrea Mumford for their continuous leadership in this important area. And with that, I will conclude my remarks. Our next order of business is the gift and grant and contact report. Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage.
Good morning. Chairperson Byram, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gifts, grant, and contract report. The report period is from January 13, 2022 through March 23, 2022. The total value for this period is $84,511,183.
Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The gift and grant contract report is approved. Our next order of business is a research presentation. Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage.
So as we enter the commencement season, it's been our tradition to celebrate student success at the April board meeting, and this year is no exception. We've invited an exceptional undergraduate researcher today. Some of you have already met her at the Winter University event in February. Mariam Syed is an undergraduate senior in the College of Arts and Letters, the College of Natural Science, and the Honors College, and she will soon earn bachelor's degrees in both physiology and French. She aspires to leverage these degrees in her extracurricular activities as a Dean's Research Scholar, Wilenga Research Scholar, Resident Assistant, Chemistry Teaching Assistant, and President of the MSU French Club to attend medical school after graduation. I'm not sure when she sleeps. This is her ninth year studying French, although she knows five languages, and she plans to use her language skills to serve in Francophone countries that need medical aid and support. Her hope is to reduce health disparities by serving the underprivileged populations as a culturally accustomed healthcare provider, since many women in conservative communities will not seek medical assistance unless the doctor is also a woman. Her passion is to empower these women to pursue higher education themselves and to become independent individuals who can contribute back to their societies by pursuing careers in STEM and healthcare. Ultimately, her goal is to serve for the International Medical Organization known as Médecins Sans Frontières. I hope my pronunciation was okay, or Doctors Without Borders. Mariam is a research assistant in the MSU Speech, Language, and Neurocognition Lab, where she is mentored by Dr. Laura Dilley. She currently is investigating technologies to assist marginalized populations like autistic and other non-speaking individuals with new methods of communication, and she will be sharing more about her research with us this morning. This is a timely presentation as April is also Autism Acceptance Month. Before we begin, I would like to congratulate Mariam. She recently learned that she has received a Fulbright Award for the upcoming year and will serve as an instructor, independent researcher, and U.S. Ambassador of Educational and Cultural Exchanges in Morocco. Please welcome Mariam Syed.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Dr. Gage, for the record. That was formidable pronunciation, so that was excellent. So I'm Miriam Sayed. I work for Dr. Laura Dilley, and I'll be representing the MSU Speech, Language, and Neurocognition Lab. And my research is focused on fostering societal transformations in attitudes towards neurodivergent populations. I know that's a mouthful, but we're going to start defining all of these terms. So we're going to start with neurodiversity. What exactly is neurodiversity? So this is considered a revolutionary concept for autism and psychiatry today. And basically what this is a growing social movement that categorizes the population into two different groups of people. The first of which is the neurotypical population. And these are individuals who have a neurocognitive function that falls into a socially acceptable range. The second group of individuals are called neurodivergent individuals, and these are individuals who have neural pathways or cognitive functions that are significantly different from what is considered the social norm. And what the neurodiversity movement does is it introduces these individuals who are neurodivergent as profiles of diversity, the same way we do with race, religion, gender, and sexual identities, as strengths, as having strengths and weaknesses, rather than pathologizing these individuals, as has been done in the clinical sphere over and over again. And what this allows us to do is to remove stigmas, remove stereotypes, and remove labels around these individuals being inherently disabled or inherently inferior to the neurotypical population. And while the neurodiversity movement addresses and describes a number of different identities, which include autism, ADHD, epilepsy, schizophrenia, and a number of other identities, our lab is specifically studying autism. And more specifically, we're focusing on non-speaking autistic individuals. So what does non-speaking mean? Non-speaking basically describes the groups of individuals who are autistic, who have any kind of limited capacity to be able to verbally express themselves. So they have some kind of hindrance when it comes to their ability to speak. And that can present itself in a number of ways, the first of which is stuttering. They can also have repetition of words over and over again, but they can also have a complete inability to be able to produce the sound of speech. And what we see in this upper right-hand corner here, this is what's called an AAC device. This is a standardized device that's being used for every single autistic individual today to be able to communicate with the world around them. And what you see up here, this is an autistic child using a letterboard. This is an AAC device. Again, this is called an augmentative and alternative communication device. And what you see here is that it requires the physical presence of an assistant every single time that this AAC device is being used. Or in other words, every single time that an autistic individual wants to speak to the people around them. And what we see is that one-third of the entire autistic population has some kind of limited ability to use speech. In other words, one-third of the entire autistic population is considered non-speaking. And the issue with autism is that autism is something that affects every single individual so uniquely that it doesn't make any sense to use a standardized one-size-fits-all device for every single autistic individual. There's no single way to diagnose autism. There's no single way or single litmus test that will tell you that you definitely have autism or you definitely don't have autism. And what we see here with some of the issues with the standardized AAC devices being used today is, one, you have to have the physical presence of another assistant every single time that an autistic individual wants to speak to the people around them, which compromises the reliability in their communication. Another issue is that we see that there's so much diversity within the autistic population that we can't use a one-size-fits-all device and expect it to work for the entire autistic population. Another issue that we see today with these standardized AAC devices is that the training is focused on the assistant. We're focused on making sure that the assistant understands how to use the software, the new software that's being updated every couple of years, instead of focusing on the autistic individual themselves and finding out what is most beneficial for that autistic individual. And the same issue is seen with technology. We're more distracted and more excited about the newest technology that's coming out and updating these AAC devices with what is considered the newest software, instead of making sure that that is the most efficient and effective way to help the autistic individual communicate with the people around them. So what our lab is trying to do is trying to demonstrate that a lack of ability to communicate doesn't necessarily translate to a lack of intelligence or a lack of intellectual capability. And we're trying to demonstrate that autistic individuals do have a desire to communicate. They're intellectually capable of communicating. And the thing that bridges these two things together is finding an AAC device that meets the specific needs of every single individual so they're able to effectively and reliably communicate with the world around them. The way that we're doing that is moving away from what was known as the medical model of disability to something that is now known as the social model of disability, which says that it's the arrangement of society that's the problem, not the disabled person themselves. And what you see here is a woman in a wheelchair and some stairs in front of her. The medical model of disability would have said that it's her impairment that's the problem. The fact that she's in a wheelchair is the issue. So what we should do is we should change her, we should cure her, we should give her prosthetics so that she's able to get up and walk and function like everybody else in society. Or, in other words, what's considered the social norm. What the social model says is that the issue is not that she's in a wheelchair. It's not her fault that she's in a wheelchair. The issue here is that we have stairs in front of her when we have the technology and resources to build a ramp. And so what we're trying to show is that you don't need to change the individual in order for them to be able to integrate into society. And one of our previous research studies had actually taken a corpus of 14 self-narratives from non-speaking autistic individuals. And what we did was categorize the sentiments across all of their phrases. And we found that the most expressed sentiment was a desire for change. These were non-speaking autistic individuals who were literary scholars, who were published poets, who were comedians, who had contributed to society in literature and in the arts at large, despite being non-speaking autistic individuals. And they all expressed a desire for change in the way that autistic individuals were being perceived in society and a desire for change in the number of opportunities that they had when it came to a social, educational, and employment context. So what are we doing in the lab to work towards a solution for these issues? Well, for one, we're replacing this standardized AAC device with something known as a head-mounted eye tracker, which you see on this lady here. So this basically uses visual fixation to visually fixate letters onto a screen, onto a letterboard, and that forms words, and that's able to relay those words to the people around you. And what we see, the benefits with these head-mounted eye trackers is, for one, it gives autistic individuals complete communicative agency. There's no need. It eliminates the need for having a physical presence of some kind of assistant present. So that doesn't compromise the reliability in their speech any longer. It also uniquely fits the needs of many nonverbal autistic individuals who are impaired by some kind of a physical disability. Some autistic individuals don't have the ability to touch the letterboard, and that's why they need an assistant present. And this eliminates the need for that altogether. A previous study that had these head-mounted eye trackers, showing them in comparison with the standardized AEC device, showed that the non-speaking autistic individuals had increased speed, increased fluency, and increased accuracy in their ability to effectively and reliably communicate with the world around them. And finally, there's hardly any training required with these head-mounted eye trackers. As was done with the standardized AEC devices, you'd now no longer need a speech pathologist and an autistic individual to spend hours in a clinic trying to learn a new software that keeps updating itself every couple of years. Instead, you have a machine that's able to do everything by itself, and all you need is the function of the eyes to be able to visually fixate words onto a screen. And so apart from these head-mounted eye trackers and AAC devices, another thing we're doing in the lab is using reframe language that's preferred by neurodivergent, non-speaking autistic individuals. So we're moving away from person-first language. And the concept behind person-first language, which is used in published medical journals today in many major research journals, the idea behind that was that you're a person first before anything else. And what our lab is doing is arguing that identity first is actually more effective. So you're acknowledging the identity before anything else. So if you take, for example, some identity, like an African-American person, you don't describe that person as a person with African-Americanness. You describe them as an African-American person because that's part of their identity and it's an integral part of who they are. And the same applies for autistic individuals. They prefer to be addressed as autistic individuals rather than a person with autism. That implies that they're inherently inferior to the neurotypical population. And so again, what all of this is allowing us to do is to support the neurodiversity movement by recognizing autistic individuals as profiles of diversity rather than as pathologized individuals. So you might be wondering, why does it matter, right? Why is everything that we're doing in this lab, the hours of research that we're putting into finding a new AAC device to replace the standardized device that's been used in clinics, why does it matter? We believe in the lab that history is repeating itself. In the same way that race, religion, gender, and sexual identities have been discriminated against in the past and have had inequity in their access to social, educational, and employment opportunities, we see that the same thing is happening with autistic individuals today. They don't have a voice to voice their opinions. They don't have the means and the resources to be able to express their identity and express their feelings to the people around them, which is limiting their ability in society and in healthcare. And we believe in the lab that access to communication is a fundamental human right, and everybody deserves to freely express themselves, to have equal opportunity, and everyone deserves to have a voice and to be heard by the rest of the individuals in society. Thank you.
Questions for Marion?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yeah.
I find your presentation very fascinating. I have a 3.5-year-old grandson who does not speak. He's very mobile, has great motor skills, is just starting to form words. And you have some interesting science and approach. I'm wondering, how you implement change. I mean, you have some, I mean, and my daughter, who's in Spokane, Washington, who's got tremendous resources available to her, cannot get the special ed departments, the departments of education, the people who should be providing these resources to really take this seriously and to provide the resources that it needs. Of course, having masks didn't help either, because, you know, the ability to see how words are formed doesn't help. So I'm wondering, how do you, I've been involved in a lot of medical devices and things and getting doctors and government and Medicare and insurance companies to pay for, you know, a groundbreaking service or equipment is difficult sometimes because people are used to the status quo. You have already experienced a lot of status quo headwinds. So how do you implement change going forward?
That's a great question. So that's pretty much our next step in research. So right now what we've done is found something, a device that people can be using that replaces a standardized AAC device. And what we're focused on is taking narratives from people who are non-speaking autistic individuals, because who better understands the experience of those people than those people themselves? So what we do is we're working with a lot of people who are non-speaking, who are autistic individuals, who identify with that population, who have contributed to society at large. So these people have done amazing things. They've published, you know, they're authors, they're poets, they're comedians, and those people are advocating. We're basically giving them a platform to advocate, and we're having them come into our lab. We're talking to different clinics, and we're basically giving them a platform to be able to share their experiences with the world and publish this kind of research that shows that the desires, that the sentiments that these non-speaking autistic individuals have and have been silenced in history. Basically what we're doing is giving them that platform to be able to show the world that non-speaking autistic individuals do have a desire to communicate, and they're intellectually capable of doing so. What they lack is the resources.
Let me just ask one last question.
Sure.
The research that you're doing, is it leading to a medical tool that allows autistic children to speak and have their voices heard? Or is it more the consultation and approach that you're trying to get people to adopt?
It's both. So we're using grounded practical theory basically to reanalyze how medical people, so people who are basically speech pathologists, people who are working directly with autistic individuals, how they're working with them, and also with educators. So a lot of this has to do with the way that people are treating individuals. So the reframe language, that has to do with basically working with a new training program, creating a new training program on how to deal with non-speaking autistic individuals. Because the way that we're treating them now, they're just segregated from society. We just have a special ed classroom where they're not integrated with the rest of society. They're not integrated with the other students. And so what we're doing is trying to create a new model. And the way that we have to do that is be able to publish this research. It takes, there's millions of steps involved, but this is one of the things that we're doing. So one is using reframe language. The other one is finding a device that works and that is, you know, is affordable and can be used in clinics. Across, you know, any education sphere, any employment context, any social context, and making it accessible to everybody.
Miriam, good luck.
And thank you
for your presentation.
Thank you.
Other questions? I just want to again compliment you on the work and the depth of your understanding. As an undergraduate, without minimizing how great our undergraduates are at MSU, it's still tough sometimes to join a lab with complex technical as well as these kind of societal impacts, and to be able to discuss it as eloquently as you can and bring it out in ways all of us, I think, were able to understand is great. I think usually I want to call you Dr. Syed.
My mom would be so happy to hear that.
I will call you Miriam if that's okay. Could you just give us a few minutes on how you found your way to MSU and kind of what are some of the ways that got you to this great, I think, synergistic position in the lab?
Sure. So I think this is one of the more forbidden subjects, but I considered transferring my first year because I was like, I didn't get into one of the universities that I wanted, and I thought that was my first choice. And then I spent my first year here, and I had so many opportunities, it would be absolutely ridiculous for me to transfer to another university. So when I joined here, I was an executive member of the French Club. I was part of the Weilinger Research Scholarship, and I was a part of so many different programs, both in natural science and also in the College of Arts and Letters. And I think a lot of other universities, they have a very locked-in curriculum. You have to follow one single path. Like, you can't pursue physiology and French. Like, it doesn't make any sense. There's no connection between the both of them. So you have to choose one or the other. And telling my mom that I'm a French major would just not be sufficient. So here at this university, I think it gave me such flexibility to be able to pursue what I wanted. You don't have to limit your capabilities and your talents and whatever you're interested in, all of your passions. You can combine them and carve your own path. carve your own career path, basically. And that's what MSU allowed me to do. I'm able to pursue physiology and French. And the way that I put them together, as Dr. Gage explained, is I'm interested in working with underprivileged and marginalized populations that are minority populations in the Francosphere. So basically in the world where French is spoken and French language has been implemented because those areas were colonized, there's a lot of populations that are underrepresented in medicine and in healthcare. And I'm really interested in working with those populations. So as Dr. Gage mentioned, one of the biggest things is women's health. So in women's health, in a lot of these populations, I come from a pretty conservative and traditional background. And a lot of the women who come from these areas, even though they speak a different language, they have the same exact experience that we grew up seeing. And what that is that a lot of women who are in these areas, they won't grow up and get educated. They don't have access to an education, or they're not willing to get educated, or they'll prioritize marriage over education. And what happens is a lot of those women who have some kind of, they need treatment. They need to get, you know, treated. They need to see a doctor regularly. And they refuse to seek treatment because there's not enough women in those populations who are doctors. They don't go and get an education. They don't pursue, you know, education in healthcare and in STEM and in these fields. And so because they're not able to see a female physician, these female patients won't go and see them, and they'll just refuse to get any treatment at all. And so what I'm interested in doing is going back to those populations and helping fill that gap between female patients and female physicians. And that really would have been impossible for me to do without having a university that supports me so well in both the College of Arts and Letters and also in the College of Natural Science. So thank you, MSU.
Thank you. Any other questions?
I think Rima has her hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. Just for the record. So Rima and then Trustee Kanaki. Yes. Dr. Rima.
So it's always a pleasure to hear from you. Your challenges of structures and use of empowering language for individuals calls for systems and environment change. It's refreshing. We know the evolution of language is really, really important in thinking about how we pose questions. And you, your challenge to deficit, you're doing that work. So it's not that you have to come up with a solution to all things that ail us. This problem posing, this reframing of individuals and how they want to be, is what is really, really important. And it is that's coming soon, I'm sure. I'm just so happy for your success and excited about this important research. I'm excited to go to the marginalized folks around the world. And MSU is fortunate to be a part of your school. Please keep us abreast of the you're serving all these folks around the world that are minoritized. And just know also that you're so very necessary. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rima Bassar, from the bits and pieces that I heard. thank you so much. That means so much to me. And I'm very lucky to be surrounded by the mentors and the professionals that I've had in my career. If it wasn't for the faculty, if it wasn't for the mentors, if it wasn't for the board of trustees, the president, the provost, everybody who's literally supported me in my career, I wouldn't be here today. So thank you to you as well.
Yeah, I just had a quick follow-up, really, to President Stanley's question about what got you here. I couldn't help but notice that you've been awarded a Fulbright, and as a Fulbright myself, I'm biased, and I was recently named a Fulbright ambassador, alumni ambassador.
Congratulations.
So I can tell already you're going to be a fabulous ambassador yourself. But I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing with the Fulbright.
Yes, absolutely. So from what we know, there's a lot that we still don't know, so we still have to find out about our city of placement and stuff. That'll happen in the coming weeks. But what I do know is that what I applied for was an ETA position with an availability to also do independent research. So I'll be teaching at a university in Morocco, and I'm hoping to do basically lead a club, an extracurricular club that focuses on women's empowerment going into STEM and into healthcare. And so we'll be working on, there's a big issue in Morocco where a lot of students, they grow up learning the traditional language, which is Darija Arabic in that area. And then when they come to the university, they just automatically start teaching French. And so a lot of students drop out of school because they're not able to keep up with the language. And so we're trying to build that, fill that gap that's missing there. And then I'll hopefully be also pursuing independent research while I'm there. So that will be the upcoming academic year.
Amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Tr- Trustee Kelly.
Yeah, thank you. So that was a great presentation. After having watched it, who's your favorite Disney character? You don't have to answer.
Yes, Trustee Scott.
Hopefully I can call you Miriam. I feel like we know each other now. I just have to say, every single time I've heard you speak, I'm just mesmerized and amazed. You make us look good. You make Michigan State look good. We're very proud of you, and I just want you to know and just to be publicly acknowledged that you are the best that we have to present to the world. And we have so many other students like you, and I just thank you for continuing to tell that story about why MSU versus somewhere else. Because we did have these conversations just yesterday about the ability of students to change their majors or go in different tracks, and that we don't just pigeonhole you when you come here. And that is something that a lot of people look to as being the difference maker for them. And so I'd love to hear you say that. We're just wishing you the best, and I just want you to know I'm one of your biggest fans. So,
Thank you so much.
I would echo that. This is the second time I've heard you speak, Miriam, and I continue to be amazed and extremely proud that you are a Spartan. You will be a Spartan for life here in just a few weeks once you graduate, and you will be a great ambassador. So please keep us informed as to your life's travels. We want to enjoy that happiness and that success with you. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Dr. Scott. Thank you, Dr. Byram. And thank you, everybody else who was here today. Thank you for the questions and comments. It was a pleasure to be here today. So thank you.
Thank you.
We're now going to move to personnel actions and information reports. I'm from Provost Woodruff.
Trustees, I present for approval the following items on the April 2022 list of personnel actions. I present for approval the following faculty appointments: Dorothy R. Carter, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Psychology, with tenure, effective August 16, 2022. Nathan T. Carter, PhD, Professor, Department of Psychology, with tenure, effective August 16, 2022. James Moran, PhD, Associate Professor, Department of Integrative Biology, with tenure, effective August 16, 2022. The action also includes the recommendation of Robert Fauskagen, Professor and Chairperson of the Department of Small Animal Clinical Sciences, fixed term, for a change in status to Professor with tenure, Department of Small Animal Clinical Sciences, effective May 1, 2021. The action also includes the following administrative appointments for approval: Christina K. Brodgen, PHR, MBA, Vice President and Chief Human Resources Officer, Office of Human Resources, effective June 1, 2022. And Kimberly Tobin, PhD, Vice President of University Advancement, effective May 1, 2022. The action also includes the recommendation that the executive management title of Vice President for Finance be reinstated for a revised title of Vice President Financial Planning and Analysis, and that all applicable policy documents be revised to reflect the new title effective April 22, 2022. I'm pleased to recommend Peril G. Dagbovi, PhD, University Distinguished Professor and Associate Dean of the Graduate School, for a change in title to Associate Provost for Graduate and Postdoctoral Studies and Dean of the Graduate School, effective April 11, 2022. Finally, the action includes the recommendation of Aaron C. Sousa, MD, Professor of Medicine and Interim Dean of the College of Human Medicine, for appointment as Dean of the College of Human Medicine, effective April 1, 2022. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions. That completes my report, President Stanley.
Thank you, Provost. Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So moved.
And I heard a second. Is there any discussion?
I just have a question. Brianna has a question.
Yes.
What about the approval for Robert Fauks?
So he arrived in COVID, and due to immigration concerns, he was not able to have the status that we identify in the motion today. He was hired as fixed term, but was not able to join us until now. So we're rectifying that in arrears.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The personnel actions are approved. Next, we will move to committee reports and other items requiring board approval. Trustee Melanie Foster will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, President Stanley. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I present that the board hereby adopts the basic residence hall double room and board rate of $10,990 for first-year residents who select the Silver Unlimited Meal Plan for the 22-23 academic year, and adopts the basic residence hall double room and board rate of $10,676 for second-year residents who select the Silver Unlimited Meal Plan for the 22-23 academic year. Is there a motion?
So moved.
Support.
VP Gore is prepared to speak.
Thank you, Trustee Foster and all trustees. We're asking for a 2.94 rate increase. We've seen unprecedented inflation. Most of us who go to the grocery store see it. we've had some of our costs go up as much as 35% in the last year, so we're asking this for our first-year students coming in this fall.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
Yeah, I'd just like to first applaud under VP Gore's leadership, our award-winning RHS program. Unfortunately, during the pandemic, we exhausted all of our reserves in RHS, which has resulted in not being able to do capital renewal projects for the past couple of years. But the good news is that RHS is going to make a significant profit at the end of fiscal year 22. And I advocate that those profits be used to offset the need for an increase.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, then. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board authorizes the administration to plan for the project entitled Farm Lane Bridge Replacement and Infrastructure Improvements.
Do I have a support for that motion?
Dan Bowman is prepared to speak.
Good morning. The Farm Lane Bridge was built in 1914, and it's deteriorated to the point where it needs to be replaced. It's basically just tired. As part of the planning for the bridge, we'd like to look at the Farm Lane corridor from Auditorium Rome to Wilson Road and look at upgrading utilities, infrastructure, add bike lanes, ADA, and other safety improvements. So this is just a plan for a project that will occur sometime in the next probably 2 to 4 years.
Any other discussion? No. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project entitled Football Complex Renovation and Addition, Phase 1. Be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees of Michigan State University hereby grants a variance to the university zoning ordinance to permit construction within a building setback.
Thank you. Do I have support for that motion?
So moved.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Dan Bolman is prepared to comment.
So improvements to the football complex are critical to maintain the football program's competitiveness and really to build on the momentum that's been established by Coach Tucker and A.D. Haller over the last couple of years. This project is really focused on student-athlete success and well-being. It's going to add spaces like student wellness support, athletic recovery, improved locker rooms, equipment rooms, strength and conditioning, a player lounge, and other amenities that focus on athletic health and well-being. What we're asking for today is just a partial approval, so we want to get started with foundations, selective demolition, structural steel, and then in June when we finish design and finished all the bidding, we'll come back with a complete budget and a complete design for the board to review.
Can you please identify the source of funds for this?
It's a 100% donor-funded project.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstention? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with a project entitled Spartan Stadium Facility Upgrades North and East Bowl Restoration and Spartan Stadium Facility Upgrades Audio Upgrades.
Support.
Thank you. Discussion.
Dan Bowman.
So not a real exciting project, but a really critical one. So Spartan Stadium is approaching 100 years old. And when you have a concrete structure exposed to weather in Michigan, you have deterioration. So this is making needed structural repairs. It's adding coatings to the treads and risers, adding expansion joints. And then also the audio system is beyond its useful life, and we need to replace the audio system, not only for safety, for emergency events, but also for the fan experience.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
That concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now hear from the Committee on Academic Affairs by Chair Diane Byron.
Thank you, President Stanley. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move that the board hereby approves the amendments to the bylaws for academic governance shown in Attachment A. And these changes are largely due to their ability to call meetings and the meeting schedule.
Do I have support for that motion?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
No. This concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now move on to the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance. Trustee Kelly.
Thank you, President Stanley. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board approve the following: a service agreement with Fibros 9, a service agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, a rights allocation agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technology, a service agreement with Great Lakes Crystal Technologies, a sponsored research agreement with AeroQ Corporation, an assignment agreement with Stephen Hugh, an option agreement with Portera Therapeutics, a sponsored research agreement with Redox Blocks, Inc., a sponsored research agreement with Infrastructure Analytics Company.
Could I have support for that motion?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Yeah, I continue to have an issue with the conflict of interest disclosure there on these contract forms, and I would hope that the administration deals with a better, more best practice type of disclosure relative to those contracts.
Any other discussion?
I think there's agreement with Trustee O'Keefe on that.
I would agree with that as well.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
This concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now hear from the Committee on Student Life and Culture from Trustee Scott.
Thank you, President Stanley. The board received updates on the DEI efforts and initiatives and the multicultural site. I'd like to note that the Turf Recreation groundbreaking event is today at 1 p.m. I hope some of you will come out and join us. Student success and sustainable health are a fundamental pillar of our strategic plan. And we believe that success in college is not only about academic success, but also the physical, emotional, and mental health of our students. I'm honored to be able to represent the board today at the groundbreaking event. This concludes my report.
Thank you so much. We will now hear liaison's report, the chairperson's report, and trustee comments. Trustee Diane Byron.
So for the liaison committees, Dr. Anthony, for the faculty.
Yes. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
The Faculty Senate welcomes this opportunity to give remarks. This year, Faculty Senate has worked in good faith with the administration to restore compensation and benefits for faculty and academic staff. Through clear communication, collaborative approaches, and focused understanding, we have now had numerous conversations on this matter. Thank you. We look forward to a positive outcome. As a body, the Faculty Senate has conducted its business regularly. We have endorsed the new discipline and sanctions policy, which we believe will be both impactful and transformational for the university and for the integrity of the caring and committed faculty that are part of this phenomenal institution.
We have worked to support the Caregiving Task Force as it prepares to submit preliminary recommendations for your consideration. The challenges that have presented themselves in the last couple of years have confirmed more than ever the caregiving needs of our constituents and MSU community members. We are in full support of enhanced caregiving assistance for the entire Michigan State University community. This is, we believe, good work. We want to take this opportunity to thank Senator Mick Fulton, to my right, for his service as chair of the University Committee on Faculty Affairs. He has chaired the UCFA as they considered the discipline and sanctions policy, compensation restoration, and the professor emeritus or emeritus policy. Thank you, Senator Fulton, for your service. We also want to thank at-large members, Senator Megan Donahue, Senator Deanne Simone, and Senator Andrea Kepsel. Senator Jack Lipton, who is chair of the University Committee on Academic Governance, Dr. Scott Emberman, who is professor of economics, and Dr. Matthew Comstock, chair of the UCFA Budget Subcommittee, for their tireless engagement in this good and necessary work of the Faculty Senate. We also celebrate the retirements and distinguished careers of many MSU faculty members who have contributed to the success of this institution. Congratulations to each of them. We are proud and wish them well on their new, much-deserved, exciting journeys. On behalf of Dr. Karen Kelly Blake and I would like for you to know that we have been honored to serve as chair and vice chair of the MSU Faculty Senate. It has not only been an honor, but an opportunity to make a positive difference for faculty, for staff, and for our students. For the record and beyond the obvious, we are also the first fixed-term faculty to ever serve as both chair and vice chair. Therefore, it has been a double honor to represent the interest of MSU faculty. On a more somber note, we wish to acknowledge President Stanley, Provost Woodruff, CDO Bennett, and other executive administrative leaders who have issued caring comments concerning the execution-style killing of Mr. Patrick Leoya. As shared previously, your remarks have conveyed your care and your support. Thank you for that, and thank you to the board. We now ask that your advocacy be transferred to actionable steps in whatever ways that you can. In view of the university's deep roots in the Grand Rapids community, we encourage the board to engage in some action that will produce tangible, real-world outcomes for those in the Grand Rapids community who are suffering from over-policing and racial battle fatigue. We want you to know that academic governance is working. We are working, and you certainly are working. Thank you. Let us continue to engage in this work together for the good and the well-being of the entire MSU community. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And our student liaisons. So thank you for your partnership with the Board of Trustees this past year. I know you've had recent elections. There will be a transfer of power, and we very much look forward to working with the new leadership representing the student liaisons.
I'm actually going to go stand up because I think it's easier for the people back to hear. I think I turned it on, but oh well.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Today I'm joined by outgoing COGS President Sarah Hugentobler, incoming COGS President Hannah Jeffrey, RHA President Caitlin Bolton, and at-large Representative Maisha Johnson. I'll start with COGS updates. At the March Council of Graduate Students full council meeting, a new executive board was elected for the 2022-2023 academic year. COGS is pleased to announce that all elected positions were filled. Joining us today in the room is Hannah Jeffrey, the incoming Cox president. At our April meeting, the board was filled with the confirmation of our appointed positions. We are excited to see what this new board will achieve on behalf of graduate and professional students. RHA's updates. As for legislation, we have two to report. As you must know, there are certain departments, programs, and incentives on campus that are in much need of a revamp and more support. One of these departments in need is the Gender and Sexuality Campus Center. For the second time this year, RHA has allocated $10,000 towards the center on campus. Although RHA is more than happy to allocate these funds in order to support our LGBTQ+ students on campus, we implore you to look into and help support VPSLE Vennie Gore to figure out a way to better support our departments on campus that help our students the most. Our departments are not receiving the aid that they need, nor are on par with our sibling schools. The supplies, travel, and operations budget of MSU's GSCC is $17,205. Meanwhile, the University of Wisconsin's Gender and Sexuality Campus Center has $55,300. University of Minnesota's Gender and Sexuality Minnesota's Gender and Sexuality Center for Queer and Trans Life is at $40,000. And just down the road, University of Michigan Spectrum Center has $84,000. There's reason to believe that this money was allocated to these centers because they are needed more than ever. I implore you to take time to support our students and the workers in SLE departments, such as the GSCC, that help the students the most. A second important piece of legislation is to call on the Board of Trustees, President Stanley, and MSU to include a pool and aquatic center in the new IM facility. At the beginning of this year, a presentation was given to the Student Leaders Council about what the student fitness tax would be put towards. We were shown a beautiful facility that included everything that students wanted. This presentation showed us a facility with a beautiful aquatic center for students. We agreed to that facility. Students agreed to that facility. Currently, RHA has a seat on the Health, Wellness, and Fitness Center Planning Committee, and that is when we learned that the current plans for the facility have changed and that the new facility currently will not include an aquatic center. While the committee and students have a variety of opinions on most aspects of this new center, there is one that we have all been able to agree on. The new fitness facility needs to have an aquatic center. Not including this aquatic facility will be one of the biggest mistakes that you all make. There are two available aquatic centers available on campus for students, IM West and IM Circle, and with the destruction of the IM West facility, one of those will be taken away. These pools are needed for students for a variety of reasons. It is needed for accessibility of non-stressful fitness on those who might not be able to participate in any other kind of cardiovascular or any other type of fitness, for fundamental educational reasons, rehabilitation and physical therapy of athletes and students, club intramural sports such as our award-winning water polo team, synchronized swim team, club swim, and dozens of RSOs. And finally, it is a place where students can go to de-stress. From what RHA has been told, this facility is being built in order to give more resources for our students and to be on par with our benchmark schools when these fitness facilities are considered. Not including a pool in this new facility will result in failures on both of these goals. Trustees, please do not let our students down and go on to approve the building of a pool in this new facility. While RHA supports our swim and dive students and urge the board to reconsider that decision, this legislation isn't about that. It is about the thousands of students who depend and are asking for some sort of aquatic facility in this new facility, and it is your duty to build this facility for us, for the students. Finally, along with ASMSU, RHA is pleased to announce the newly elected RHA president. She is not here today, but her name is Belle Lechner, and she was voted by her 52nd session to preside over the 53rd session General Assembly. She will begin on the first day of the summer semester. We will keep you all in the loop concerning the election and hiring of the rest of our board, but this is what RHA has for you today. This is my last time to think that I will sit in front of you all today and listen and report to all of you. It is crazy to think that next year I will just be Caitlin Bolton and not President Bolton, but I am excited to go into my last year of this university to hopefully help some other groups of students somewhere. However, I did just want to personally thank you all for the support that you have given me and the students I represent for the past 2 years. So on behalf of myself and my team, we just want to say thank you and please keep doing the work you are doing. For some at-large updates, Some Ramadan participants living on campus have expressed gratitude for having prepackaged breakfast options in the dining halls, prayer rooms on campus, as well as student organizations and other Lansing resources to support them. However, students have expressed concerns about having more time in the cafeteria after breaking their fast. They currently have less than an hour. Students have also asked for prayer rooms in every neighborhood on campus. Many Muslims break their fast at nighttime, and this may be an inconvenient time to travel on campus. Also, there currently aren't any designated prayer rooms in East or South neighborhoods, and the prayer rooms for North and River Trail are in the libraries, so having reflection rooms or prayer rooms in every residence hall would be ideal. Thank you, Board of Trustees and Vice President Venny Gore, for agreeing to increase the promotion of the current resources available for Muslim students in the future. And finally, for ASMSU's updates, of which I'm the president, I am pleased to announce that ASMSU has selected its undergraduate student body office of the president over the past couple of nights. These meetings lasted from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m., and chairing these elections is why I'm exhausted and knocked my nameplate off the table, so you'll have to forgive me for that. But most importantly, joining us today in this room is Jordan Kovach, the student body president-elect. Joe, will you stand up if you're not already standing? Joe and their team of vice presidents and chief officers will be taking on their roles as the senior leadership team for the undergraduate student body on the first day of the summer semester, which is May 16th. Jordan is joined by Vipul Adesumili, the incoming vice president for finance and operations, Aaron Itaralde, the returning vice president for academic affairs, Ishan Modi, the returning vice president for governmental affairs, Austin Grondin, the incoming vice president for internal administration, and Hedy Omar, the incoming vice president for student allocations. A month ago, ASMSU also hired its two chief officers for the 22-23 academic year, including Chief of Staff Jack Harrison and Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer Nadir Hamid. Secondly, today is Earth Day, and this past week has been Earth Week, and I am tremendously proud to state that ASMSU has worked with and co-sponsored legislation with MSU Sunrise Movement, who spoke to you today and has passed countless pieces of green legislation. Our internal sustainability team, Cody Evans and Emily Hoyempa, successfully planned a week of programming to provide resources for and teach about the sustainability movement. I'm hopeful that the eloquence of today's speakers and their calls not for a better future, but a future period, does not go unanswered. I'm also hopeful that the questions asked pertaining to calls for transparency in this process also do not go unanswered. I'm sure that President-elect Kovach and the rest of the incoming Office of the President for ASMSU can tell you that they will not stop advocating for these things, but advocacy is just that, a request for action. We all need you to follow through on what this community so desperately needs and what the world so desperately needs. I also want to reflect on the statements from the previous athletes of the MSU Swim and Dive team, the MSU Swim Club, and members of Battle for Spartan Swim and Dive. Similarly to the topic I just discussed, ASMSU is standing legislation supporting the effort of reinstatement, as well as identifying creative solutions in our advocacy to get the decision makers back to the table. The administrators I routinely meet with as student body president have never responded to me when it has to do with Spartan Swim and Dive. I can only characterize this response as bizarre, considering that I have never been treated this way on any other topic before. Based on my conversations with these folks fighting for reinstatement, I have learned that similarly, no one has bothered to answer their questions or work with them. These folks have found solutions for the obstacles cited that initially led to the canceling of the program, and yet I have heard no response to this. Logically, it makes absolutely no sense to me. You at least owe these folks an explanation for why somehow this is all still insufficient. I truly hope that the lack of reinstatement is not because the university doesn't want to have made a decision to rather quickly reverse it. Being a leader myself, I have learned that I am going to be wrong sometimes, and if I never listen to people when they tell me this, I have effectively told my constituents that I know better than them on all topics. Being trusted to do a job doesn't mean I've never had to reconfigure my answer to something or had to apologize for a misstep. I've learned that that's leadership, way more than constant reassertion that I won't change my decision when presented with viable and constant data telling that perhaps I have made a mistake. Though I cannot reinstate this team unilaterally, I hope that this profoundly strong community of people knows that the undergraduate student government stands behind you and also can't make sense of the lack of logic that has followed this process. My heart goes out to you, even though my own personal competitive swim involvement ended with the diagnosis of a chlorine allergy. I hear you, and ASMSU will always be willing to continue the fight. Finally, this is my last time addressing and working with the Board of Trustees, and I'd like to say that I'm hopeful that my successor and their team can continue to use this avenue for advocacy. I will genuinely miss attending these meetings and liaison to the board from ASMSU, but I will be honest, I am looking forward to retiring from my position and get back to just being Georgia. Thank you for all of your time and your invitation into this space, and I wish all of you the best in the future. This concludes the report from the student liaisons. As always, Sarah, Maisha, Caitlin, and I, as well as our successors, are available to respond to and promote student concerns, and we welcome engagement from the board, administration, faculty, and most importantly, students. Thanks.
Thank you again, Georgia, and student liaisons.
It's also Georgia's birthday.
Yeah. Oh, well,
I'm happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Georgia. So as chairperson of the board, I want to start my comments by acknowledging our public speakers today and thank you for taking the time to address the board. We do listen to you, and we do take your comments into consideration as we deliberate on the business of the university. This is a celebration about students, and so if you would bring up the screen, this is the time of year that we recognize our Board of Trustee Scholarship awardees. It would have been wonderful to have them in person with us today, but there are 175 of them. And when we tried to logistically figure out and keeping with fire safety and everyone's safety, we decided that we would continue to have them scrolled up on the board. So please, as the screen scrolls, read the names of our recipients. They will be recognized at an in-person reception before graduation, of which I know several trustees will be in attendance. They will include not only the scholarship awardee, their parents, and they frequently invite someone from their college. So it's a wonderful event. We get a chance to hear what their future plans are, and it's always a very exciting time, and I take personal pride in listening to all these wonderful stories. And so this year, with 175 of them, I'm sure we're going to hear a lot of wonderful stories. But each one of these scholarship recipients receives a certificate acknowledging their award, but also, more importantly, they get a $1,000 check from the Board of Trustees. So these are the brightest of our students graduating. They receive a 4.0 GPA. So it's an exciting time for them, and so I know it's going to take 2 minutes, which is why I'm rambling a little bit here. I don't want to shortchange any of these students, and I'm, like I said, I'm looking forward to seeing them and shaking their hand, congratulating them, and learning more about their future plans. And if you were around campus yesterday, which I'm sure most of you were, with the beautiful weather, you also saw Spartans posing for pictures at Sparty in their cap and gown. And all I could say was, like, it was 4 o'clock. We were on our way over to tour Jenison, and I thought, spring is here. Hallelujah, spring is here. But it's a wonderful time of year. I know it's a source of pride for the teaching-focused faculty, for members of our tenured faculty, and all of those that touch the lives of a student as they spend their first 4 years and beyond here at Michigan State. So the screen is now back without any of the students scrolling. So I hope you had a chance to just see a little bit of the students' names. And because I think brevity is more, so less is always more, I'm going to go right to acknowledging a retirement. Marty Heil, I believe you're here. Would you please stand, Marty? I want us to be able to see your face. Marty is somebody that's very familiar here on campus, but she's also retiring, and she's going to close that chapter at Michigan State University. Really, for this is your second chapter here. Your second chapter here. But you will be starting a new chapter in your life. And as Board of Trustees, we have a resolution, and I want to read it and to be able to share it with you today because we do very much appreciate your service. So the Michigan State University Board of Trustees today extends to Vice President for Advancement, Marty K.S. Heil, its deep appreciation for her years of dedicated service to this university, its students, employees, leadership, and alumni. Born and raised in Lansing, Marty Heil is a 1976 graduate of MSU's College of Communication Arts and Sciences and with a bachelor's degree in advertising. She began her dedicated service to this university on March 21, 1980, working her way through the ranks as development officer. She was promoted to the role of Associate Vice President for University Development in 1996, where she helped lead the university through the Advancing Knowledge, Transforming Lives capital campaign, raising more than $1.4 billion. In 2009, Marty officially retired from MSU and joined the Indiana University Foundation as Senior Vice President for Development, where she spent 4 years managing principal and individual gifts, regional campuses, annual giving, talent management, and marketing communications. She then became the Vice President for Development and Alumni Relations at Virginia Commonwealth University in April 2017. Marty Heil was called out of retirement by her alma mater in October 2018 to oversee development and alumni relations and to help MSU complete its most recent Empower Extraordinary campaign, a capital campaign, which ultimately raised more than $1.8 billion in critical financial support for the university. You're right. Thank you for that. Most recently, she began laying the groundwork to position MSU for success in its next capital campaign. Her longstanding relationship with alumni, donors, and university personnel, along with her lifetime of experience, have left an indelible mark on university advancement at MSU. In addition to a lifetime of professional service to MSU, Vice President Heil has been a longtime and faithful financial supporter, making her first gift to the Essential Edge Fund in 1980. This past year, she was recognized in the prestigious Snyder Donor Society for her lifetime contributions to MSU. For the vital relationship she has forged with financial supporters of MSU throughout her extensive career, her dedication and leadership, and in appreciation of her personal philanthropic support, the Michigan State University Board of Trustees offers its deep gratitude to Marty Heil on her retirement. Would someone please? I will move. Will someone please support?
Support.
So, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Marty, thank you for your service. We very much appreciate you, and we wish you Godspeed in your retirement. Thank you. That concludes my report, President Stanley, and my comments.
Okay. Trustee Kelly?
Yeah, first of all, thank you, Marty. I'd like to also note and congratulate the Board of Trustees Scholarship Awardees and all of the graduates. And if you'll indulge me, one of those graduates happens to be my son. So my wife and I are very proud and happy. We're proud that that's our fourth MSU graduate, all of whom graduated on time and all of whom have jobs. Right. And we're also, thank you, by the way, but we're also happy that after 15 straight years of having wrote checks to MSU, we're done. So.
No. Now you can do philanthropic donation.
Yeah, right. Not enough for a while.
Yeah, right.
All right, that's my report. Thank you.
Get your checkbook out.
Yeah. Trustee Foster.
Thank you. First, I'd like to direct your attention to this beautiful crystal
award
over here. The STEM Teaching and Learning Facility, which is what this award represents, continues to be recognized for its innovation and exceptionalism, with recent recognition by the Associated General Contractors of America for 2021's most significant project in the entire United States. Last month, STEM and the project delivery team were selected as the sole recipient of AGC's 2022 AGC Build America Grand Award, rising above nearly two dozen other national Build America Award winners. The Build America Award recognizes the nation's most impressive construction projects across all building, highway, and transportation, utility infrastructure, federal, and heavy sectors.
Projects are selected based on demonstrated achievements in state-of-the-art advancement, project management, innovation and construction techniques or materials, safety record, client service, community relations, environmental sensitivity, and partnering excellence. MSU's TEM Teaching and Learning Facility merged adaptive reuse with flexible learning infrastructure and sustainable mass timber materials to transform the long-abandoned Shaw Lane Power Plant into a state-of-the-art learning space for science, technology, engineering, and math. STEM is the first building in the state of Michigan constructed with mass timber cross-laminated timber technology. As anyone who's visited the building since its public opening last fall can attest, STEM is a magnet for MSU students and truly exceptional learning and gathering space. So I'd like to congratulate Granger Construction, who built the project, and especially our fine folks at IPF, led by Dan Bowman, for your leadership in this project. And it is truly an exceptional space. If no one's been there, I really advocate you do a walkthrough. I'd like to thank VP Beauchamp and Dean Souza for putting together a fabulous tour of our Flint medical programs earlier this month that I toured with Trustee T-Bay. It was great meeting with our faculty, our students, and especially the community representatives that are so passionate about Flint. I'd also like to acknowledge that earlier this week, under Rodney Winokur, we won a jazz competition at Lincoln Center, that there were eight invitees, university invitees, and Michigan State University finished number one in that competition. Mm-hmm. Also, was great participating last Saturday in the Izzo Legacy Run, although I walked, but they had over 3,000 participants. This was the third year the Izzo family has done the run, and they have raised over $400,000 for our local charities. So the Izzo family are truly, as our Spartan family, so give back to our community. I'd also like to thank Marty. It's been a pleasure to work with you over the decades, and especially thank you for coming back in 2018 in a real time of need for this university. So thank you. I consider you a great friend. I'd like to congratulate my colleague, Renee Kanaki Jefferson, on her nomination for the Democrat Board of Trustees. And finally, just congratulate all of the graduating class of 2022 and our Board of Trustee Award Scholarships. Thank you.
Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Thank you. So I want to acknowledge all of our graduates and also our Earth Day. I want to echo the sentiments of my colleagues and keep my comments short as well. So I will just respond very briefly to some of the public comments, because I always appreciate when anyone takes the time to not just get up early in the morning to join us, but just speak out on issues that you're passionate about. And this is what we need in our world. So I thank you for that. And in particular, I want to say thank you to Dr. Brahinsky and Dr. Rodriguez-Peria for coming and speaking with us about our teaching-focused faculty. I got my start on this campus as a teaching-focused faculty member, and so I especially appreciate the concerns raised in particular about the ability to have a voice and a vote, and also the stark data that we were presented with in terms of the salary disparity in contrast to other institutions and even within our own. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. It's important work, not easy work, and thank you for representing our very, very important teaching-focused family. In fact, well, faculty and family, right? We are a family. I also want to say thank you to the Sunrise representatives, and again, happy Earth Day to all of you. Thank you for making time to push us to do more and to think hard about how we can, and also in that vein, recognizing the work of Dr. Lamour and the other members of the MSU Ad Hoc University Sustainable Investment Working Group. I think I got that right. I appreciate you giving us questions. Some of the questions that we were given I can answer, some of them I cannot. And so I'm asking our secretary, Secretary Scrissoni, to help us all have the answers to those questions, because I think that is important for us to do. And on that note, I think I will close out by saying go green, because it's appropriate, especially on Earth Day, right? So go green.
Trustee O'Keefe.
Thank you. Happy Earth Day. I'd like to take this opportunity to really promote our STEM program, which I know is near and dear to Provost Woodruff's heart. And I look at all the youth and enthusiasm in the student body and realize that there's productive change in our future. I think this is the third straight meeting that Sunrise Development has expressed their opinions on the environment and fossil fuels. You are clearly passionate about the Earth. My strong recommendation, though, is that perhaps you should consider seeking a STEM degree to be part of the research that is going to be required. This will be a long road to hoe. For long as I can remember, the so-called experts have predicted the Earth is coming to an end, at least for 50 years. And yet, here we are. The world is not ending in 2030, 2035, or any random date in the future. At the current pace, there may not be a solution until at least 2100, as unpalatable as that sounds. We need to pick up the pace. The issue is energy. We consume a lot of it. It impacts every aspect of our life. Even whale blubber has been around in indigenous communities and is still used. It seems like forever. Fossil fuels are not going away anytime soon. The issue of divestment is a gross oversimplification of a very complex problem. Elon Musk, a visionary, has noted for electric vehicles to be charged, the electric grid needs to be increased twofold just for vehicles. Of course, this is in the face of an adequate grid currently demonstrated by brownouts in Texas and the Northeast. Of course, the very electricity that we rely upon is powered by coal, perhaps the dirtiest fuel. Nobody wants nuclear power in their backyard, which is a solution, with the reminder of Three Mile Island and Chernobyl. Then, of course, is the environmental issues associated with the mining of lithium, nickel, and cobalt, precious metals used to make batteries that are not in great supply in the U.S. You want to understand the reason people fight for Afghanistan and Ukraine? That is where those precious metals are mined in great abundance by people who have no regard for the earth and use child labor like it's toilet paper. Electric vehicles don't seem to be the solution in its current state. Wars with countries with precious metals is now the new version of the M&A activity. It may be interesting to follow the geopolitical landscape. Solar may work in sunny areas like Florida, but not so much in the Midwest. Solar's issue is storage. It is hard to inventory solar energy when you need it. Wind power is bad for wildlife, and again, it's an intermittent power source, not in abundance. Wind simply runs counter to needs. It generates too much power when we need it and generates too little when we need more. The storage capacity to account for this doesn't exist yet. Landfills filled with scrap windmills also destroy the earth. General Motors, who can't meet the governmental EPA standards by 2030, has made the robust proclamation that their production will be all EV. Toyota, the largest automaker in the world, laugh at such goals in assertion because they understand the environmental problem with batteries, the inadequacy of the electrical grid, without even addressing the earth with battery disposal. Electrifying the auto fleet will require a massive overhaul of the power grid and an enormous increase in power generation, which does not exist today in a clean form. We can expect improvements, but they won't come without a cost. Nothing does. There is no free lunch. Toyota has publicly warned about this. And GM may be virtue signaling to win favor with those in power because they cannot meet the EPA standards and they will need the government help to stay in business. But by the way, Toyota isn't saying this can't be done. It's just saying so far the conversation isn't anywhere near serious enough to get things done. You can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. There is no one who doesn't believe in protecting the earth. As long as we have a need for energy, we will probably use fossil fuels. This is based that when energy is found, it is usually additive and not displacing. There are lots of problems to be solved, and I see all the great young minds in this room with hopes that you can solve them. We need investment and lots of it. We also need passionate and creative minds. Perhaps there is a bigger role for you to play. So as not to address a problem without a solution, perhaps a STEM degree. I know Provost Woodruff has taken applications, and MSU is making a huge commitment in this area. We need passionate and creative minds to solve our energy problems. Why not you? And final, I'd like to congratulate Marty Heil on a great retirement. You have shown an indefatigable attitude towards supporting MSU over a long stretch of time, and that is certainly not gone unnoticed, so thank you. That's the end of my comments.
Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I first want to just say Happy Earth Day as well. So go green for that. I also want to just talk about an event we had as trustees at the Cow's House yesterday, an opportunity to meet with our union leaders here on campus, and it was just an awesome occasion to me to have the opportunity, I think, to thank some people that work on this campus that I think oftentimes go unrecognized for the work that they do to keep our campus as beautiful as it is, to make sure we've got power here on campus, making sure that things run the way that they need to. I was even joking, but actually kind of serious, that I think we need to do more to recognize and let them know how much they are appreciated, and I'm hoping that we will do something to recognize our local unions and the work that they do on this campus, so I just want to publicly thank them. I also want to just talk a little bit about the tour that we had the opportunity to take yesterday. I want to thank our athletic director for actually taking the time, and I actually think it was a pretty smart move on his part to show us the dire needs that we have in Jennison Fieldhouse. For those athletes that are in our non-revenue producing sports, to go through Jennison Fieldhouse yesterday and to see the state of what they are dealing with, the accommodations that they have, the facilities that they need to train and to do what they do, was just disheartening. It's sad to me that many local high schools that I know of have facilities that are much better than what we have for our Big Ten athletes here on our campus. And it certainly was eye-opening and really put a fire under me that we have got to do more. Marty Heil and the work that she's done has gotten us so far, and I hope that we can just continue on the trajectory that she has sent us on, because we've got to raise money in order for this university to do what we need to do. We are behind the eight ball, and I'm tired of really, you know, looking at the people down the road and what they've been able to do. When we compare our endowments, there's just no question that we don't have what we need to do what we need to do, and the only way we're going to get there is to raise more money. And I know this is probably, I don't want to talk a lot about it, but we've got to get fired up on raising money here. And I am just hoping and imploring those of you that care so much about this university and have the desire to see us to be everything that we can be, that we start to put our money where our mouth is, start to think about giving. Think about giving even legacy gifts after you are long gone that will help this university to proceed, to be able to do the things that we need to be successful. And I want to say to our athletic director that I am 100% behind everything that we can do as trustees to help you to get our facilities to where they need to be so that these athletes have pride in what they're doing, where they're, you know, practicing, that they have adequate facilities so that they can compete at the level that we want them to be able to. And we need to show that commitment in more than just words. And so I want to thank you for that tour and just let you know I am 100% behind anything that we can possibly do to help you to do what we have seen needs to be done. So thank you to our athletic director. I also want to just recognize once again our faculty and staff. When we were here back in February, I think it was, I was all gung-ho about doing some kind of reception or something that we can do to acknowledge just the sacrifice, the commitment, and the just the greatness that we have in our faculty and our staff here at this university, everything that they endured over COVID, the way that they pivoted so quickly, everything that they have sacrificed as far as some of the benefits and salaries, all of these things, I want to acknowledge it more than just words. So I am going to just publicly state that I'm going to hopefully rally the troops so that we can do something before the end of the year to thank you all for everything that you've done. We truly appreciate you. I also want to congratulate our scholars. I unfortunately won't be able to attend the event, but you all amaze me. I couldn't even imagine getting a 4.0 ever in my life, you know, elementary, middle school, high school, or let alone here at MSU. So I don't know. You guys are great. I feel like, you know, I just don't even measure up sometimes when I think of the accomplishments of our students. So congratulations to you all. Kudos to your parents for whatever they did to make you be what you are. Like, really, they are the real MVPs in this, right? And then on a more somber note, as we heard Dr. Anthony say, I want to state that I am outraged as obviously a black woman, a mother of a black son. I have black men in my family, but it's also not, as Trustee Vassar indicated yesterday in our meeting, a problem just for males. It's a problem for black people, period. What we are continuing to see happen over and over again with over-policing. And I would echo the sentiments that MSU, with the great work that we've done in Grand Rapids, with the presence that we feel so strongly about and the connections that we made and the commitment to that community, we need to also be committed to affecting change in the way that we can, which as an institution of education, I think, is to educate in this area. I am imploring my colleagues that we as a board need to collectively implement something strategic in the Grand Rapids area. I think the time is now, and I think it needs to be on both sides, in law enforcement, but also in educating black people, period, on how to survive traffic stops so that we can stop seeing these things happen. And so I would like to see us as a board to do something. I would like to see it happen sooner rather than later, and I sent you all a late-night email to that effect, and I hope I get a response. With that being said, that would be the end of my comments. Go green, go white. Thank you. Oh, and to Marty, you're great. Thank you so much for what you've done.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Okay, sorry, I'm done.
Trustee TV. Oh,
forgot who I was next. Thank you. I first want to apologize, Dr. Anthony, that I had to step out during your remarks. I day job. Just remind everyone, I don't get paid to be here. I get paid to do my job outside, but I apologize for stepping up for your remarks. And I also just want to thank you for just each time that we meet. And you, I find you to be very inspiring. And I think I can only imagine being a student in one of your classrooms and listening to you teach. I just commend you for just... You remind me a lot, actually, of Dr. Vassar, where just the eloquence of and the thoughtfulness of what you put in your words. I learn so much from even just the few minutes that we spend meeting with all of you. And I do want to say that I am committed to working with Trustee Scott to do something. And I want to acknowledge that as a white woman, I cannot imagine what it feels like, but I can commit that I will never get desensitized to what my fellow community members feel on a daily basis. And Doc, you also got emotional yesterday when they were talking. And I just, every time this happens or I hear about it, there's always that question of what I can do. And I continue to ask that, what I can do and what voices can I lift and using the privilege that I have never once had to fear for my life when I've seen a police car or been pulled over driving. I am someone that frequently speeds, and I don't have to worry about if I get pulled over
that is a moment in time. And to hear you talk about, and Brianna, your children, and as a parent, what you have to go through every single day with your children out into the world, I just can't even fathom that. Parents in general worry about their children's well-being, but what you have to endure every day is unimaginable to me, and I'm just so tired of it, and I would like to do everything possible to help and to lift the voices and to make real change, because I, as a criminal justice major, I support police, but this is unacceptable, and it cannot go on any further, and I implore everyone in this room to never get desensitized to every time we hear about this, and hopefully not have to hear about it any longer, but don't get desensitized to this. You know, comments have been made about when it started. It started so very long ago, and we cannot forget that George Floyd was not the first. I know it is the one that seemed to have changed the conversation, but he was not the first, and unfortunately not the last, and we cannot get desensitized to this. And so I just want you to know that I'm committed and will talk to you about any ideas that you have that we as a board can do, that we as members of society can do, to make our fellow humans feel like humans and feel safe. So I just want to thank you for continually to bring it up and to not let us forget and to challenge us to do something about it. And I thank you so much. I also want to acknowledge Georgia and Sarah and Caitlin. I didn't realize because you weren't on the call yesterday that you are also leaving us, but I just want to thank you for your service. Each of you are tremendous leaders, and I think you sort of said it best, Georgia. What you guys do is, as a former student at MSU, I can't even imagine how you go to class and do what you do. So thank you for the time and the energy that you've put in. And Hannah and Jordan, I thank you so much for being here today, and I'm looking forward to working with you. I also want to talk to Norm about our Trustee Foster and I's time in Flint, and really the feeling there. There's something special there, and I am excited about what to see Dean Souza do over there, and thank you for showing it to us. And to, as a fundraiser, appreciative of Brianna's comments about asking people for money. Marty knows that is it. For a fundraiser, you got to make the ask, and I appreciate Brianna using that. So you see, you could be a fundraiser. You get it. But I also want to, in addition to talking about athletics, would like to talk about academics and the importance of giving to our academics and endowed professorships so that we can bring the best of the best into our university, and to also acknowledging all my teaching-focused faculty out there, paying our faculty, our teaching-focused faculty who are touching the lives of our students every day, what they deserve to be paid. And so I think that's another plug for fundraising and why we need more money at MSU. And with that, I just want to thank everyone for being here at 8 o'clock on a Friday morning, and hopefully we can go out from this meeting and do better each day. So, thank you.
Trustee Vassar.
Okay, so I'm going to go slowly and basically this time. Can you hear me? No.
We can hear you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So this hot spot is not so hot, so I apologize. And then there's this voice issue that I have to blend in. If you are silent about your pain, they'll kill you and say you enjoy it. As Zora in person said my earrings today, I would like just to give a small moment of silence for the Grand Rapids family who lost their son, brother, uncle, and father, and the countless families who have to bear the heavy grief of losing loved ones at the hands of those commissioned to protect and serve us. Thank you. I look forward to working with VP of Public Safety, Marvin Lynch, and the ever-thoughtful Dr. Beauchamp to create a constructive action to communicate MSU's engagement in the struggle for justice. I apologize. I cannot be with you today in person. I have to be in San Diego for a professional conference. Sorry, not sorry. It's nice. It's nice, though. Sunrise Movement students, thank you for your resilience and perseverance. I appreciate watching your evolution in thinking and strategy to fight for causes you know are important. Ms. Syed, I think my message kind of got messed up last time, so I'll just say it again. It's always so good to hear from you. Your challenge of structure and use of empowering language for individuals calls for systems and environments change, and it's refreshing. And that's what the work that we are doing at MSU is for changing the environment and the system so that students can be successful here. And I'm just so happy for your success, excited about your important research, and heartened by your devotion to marginalized folks around the world. MSU is fortunate to be a part of your story. Please keep us abreast of your many accomplishments to come. You are so very necessary. I want to give a special thanks to John Ambrose, who organized a phenomenal family day that saw future Spartans from across the country come together to meet one another, meet our administration, our coaches they love. And Mr. Ambrose is demonstrably dedicated to student retention and matriculation, and has ushered in record enrollment numbers since I've served on the board. Thank you for your commitment to students within the P20 pipeline, particularly those in Southeast Michigan who daydream of dyeing green and white. ASMSU's outgoing president, Georgia Frost, happy birthday. Thank you for your service to the community and to the university. Thank you for your admonishments for us and your exhortations for your peers. Your voice, your passion, your clarity will be missed. Happy end of the semester. I'm so happy the semester is over. You don't even know. I'm grateful the semester is over. Finish strong, MSU community. Finish strong. I usually encourage you to edify yourselves with rest. I do that today. You should rest because rest is revolutionary. As Chair Byron acknowledged, it's spring. So find renewal in the sun. Rejuvenate with the joy of new flowers and revel as we reemerge and reunite with friends and family. Find some fun. Go green.
Go white.
Go white.
Concludes. Yes. Is there a motion to adjourn the meeting?
So moved.
Second?
Support.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.